Hello and welcome to The Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, from exclusive interviews with leading experts to a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes of research and innovation. I'm your host, Lauren Buchanan. Today's episode recaps a discussion during a recent Masterclasses in Dermatology Atopic Dermatitis meeting. Course Director Dr. Emmy Graber moderated a faculty Q&A after sessions concluded. She asked leading atopic dermatitis experts about bathing routine advice for patients and families, taking different ages, cultures, and more into consideration. Doctors Rebecca Smith, Lawrence Eichenfield, Zakiya Presley-Rice, and Christopher Bunick weighed in.
We'll just kind of get a general sense as to how the whole group does things, because you all might approach some of these atopic dermatitis conundrums in a little bit of a different way. So I want to get everyone's approach. And I think I'm going to start with something simple. And I think a lot of you touched on this a bit, but I get asked this a lot, and I don't know what the right answer is. Sometimes I kind of have my preference, but I want to hear yours. When patients come in, let's say, I mean, every atopic dermatitis patient is different, but let's say maybe a five-year-old patient who has mild to moderate atopic dermatitis, and the parents say, well, you know, how often should they have a bath, and what should I use, and what should the bathing routine be? You know, how do you advise patients? And maybe it's different, of course, for different ages. So kind of tell me a little bit about that. And, you know, there are some, you know, that I think there are different feelings. And I think Rebecca touched on this. There are some cultural practices too, some cultures that like a shampoo to bathe their patients with. And also too, Zakiya, maybe you can touch on that as well. If you have different patients who come in of different races who want to use maybe a bar versus a whatever. So what's your bathing routine like? Maybe Rebecca, I'll start with you. And how do you advise, you know, patients? Let's just say a five-year-old with mild to moderate eczema. So they can sit up in the bath, obviously. And what do you tell patients and their parents?
Actually, if they're five, I live in the South, so often they are playing outside, they're hot, they're sweaty, they're on sunscreen and bug spray. So I am a daily bather of that age. When they're younger, maybe not so much. And maybe if they're really old, maybe not so much. But a five-year-old that's active and getting into everything and getting dirty, I like to bathe them every day with something very gentle, soap and smear, so they are in the bathtub within 3 minutes of getting out. They put the medicine on the rash and the moisturizer everywhere. And again, it's patient dependent, but that five-year-old needs a bath every day.
Every day. Okay. Is anyone different? Would anyone stray from that? Yeah, Larry, go ahead.
Let me tell some stories, because we actually did one of the studies that helped to show that avoiding bathing wasn't necessary or needed, and probably had some negative benefits, because we still get patients in regularly who are avoiding bathing because of atopic dermatitis, the sense that if you bathe, you'll dry out the skin. So we actually did a study, it's a long time ago now, where we brought in patients, both with atopic dermatitis and not atopic dermatitis patients, and we soaked their arms, and then we brought out their arms and did nothing. And then we soaked their arms and we moisturized immediately after. And then we soaked their arms and we didn't moisturize and waited an hour. And then we didn't soak their arm and just moisturized. And we did transepidermal water loss and capacitance measures, so the technical measurements for the qualities of the skin. And what we showed, actually as expected, was that if you moisturize, your skin's moister. If you bathe and don't moisturize, you're transiently drier for a while. If you bathe and moisturize, you end up moister than when you began. And so when I first presented this data, so basically said, you can moisturize and you can bathe and moisturize, just don't bathe and don't moisturize, right? So I gave this lecture at the Pediatric Derm Society. It was right before break. And at break, I'm over, you know, getting some coffee. And it was hysterical, because the people who are from the dry school were like, so you really showed you don't need to bathe, you just need to moisturize. And the people who... Yeah, they have to be like, great, you showed that bathing's fine as long as you moisturize. Everyone interpreted it through their own prism. So start with that as the baseline. I'd say, but there's some clinical comments that end up with me sounding more like Becky in clinical practice most of the time. So my general spiel to families is that it's something along that lines. At that, so basically daily bathing or every other day bathing is probably reasonable. But I say I don't like to argue with grandmothers because there are variable cultural practices. On the other hand, the more severe the eczema, the more I think daily bathing matters. And I think that studies, some of the studies potentially on bleach baths, including Lisa Beck's recent study that came out on bleach baths, that show tremendous benefits of it, but not from a microbial standpoint, maybe working from bathing. They didn't do bathing as a control. So I think there's tremendous advantages to bathing if you have more severe, crusty, super infected eczema.
All right, great. Thanks. Yes.
I love those previous comments. If I could just briefly get in here and talk a little bit more about topical selection, just in general, going back to xerosis and race and seeing a few handful of studies seeing xerosis being increased in African-American or Black patients, and also a few subset studies seeing it increase in Asian patients. And I'm sure we have in our practice seen that play out, and sometimes not, and also in white patients as well. But just thinking about that in terms of not just our good dry skincare, but our a selection for a vehicle for either topical corticosteroid, topical calcineurin inhibitor, and now these new molecular specifics. And so, you know, oftentimes if a patient who has more xerosis, I will pick an ointment, and we'll talk about that in terms of that maybe something that's tolerated better, but also just also hydrates a little bit better than something that's cream or solution-based or foam-based. The other thing I would say is the reverse is true as well. If someone doesn't really suffer from xerosis, I may not be going to an ointment, especially in 98 degrees, 90% humidity in the South, I'll be going with a cream. And then also speaking to the sense of like where we're treating in the body or on the body in terms of the scalp, I may go with an ointment for someone who has a thicker hair, curlier hair, and that ointment can moisturize. But with thick hair that's blown out, thin hair, maybe going to something that's more solution-based so that hair is not being weighed down with an ointment or essentially a solution that would potentially take out a press of pressed out hair. So, I mean, I think there's just so much cultural nuance here that goes beyond race and region. But I think it's just important to spend the time in talking about that with the patients, what they've tried before and they've liked and get those things out. We have plenty of examples in the clinic that will say, this is an ointment, this is a cream, this is a solution, this is a foam, et cetera. But love it. I could talk about this topic forever, clearly.
That's great. Chris, Peter, anything additional to add on bathing?
I'll just say one thing about xerosis. So xerosis for Black patients is not necessarily the same as for lighter skin patients. So Christina Guzman-Strong actually had a wonderful talk at, I think, the SID a year or two ago, showing that Black patients with xerosis, there's actually more Loricrin deficiency compared to filaggrin in lighter skin types. So we're still just at the infancy of understanding some of the nuances of the molecular differences of the proteins, the proteinaceous skin barrier, and what it's doing to help the skin barrier. So I just wanted to throw that point. So I'm a big fan of bleach baths. I do think that they work. I also just really, I tell my patients and parents of children that if something has like Bath and Body Works or one of these fancy names and there's colors and fragrances, it's probably not good for you. I really stress the hypoallergenic products that are not filled with different chemicals, because we know that that these patients have barrier defects. And so we want to minimize the penetration of things through the barrier. And as Dr. Leo said about the allergens, right, even how food allergens can go through that barrier. I like giving the parents an analogy or adult patients the analogy that, like, if you had makeup, right, brand new makeup is nice and smooth. It's kind of a little almost like mud. Whereas the dry riverbed, if you leave that makeup case open and it becomes a dry riverbed, that at a microscopic level, you have to be thinking about the skin barrier. And we see a lot of parents of children that they think that, oh, the eczema looks better, I'm not going to moisturize. But I stress you have to keep doing it. Even if it looks good at a microscopic level, you have to keep protecting the barrier. And so I really try to emphasize that.
For more Dermatology Times content, from articles to videos to podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com.